Welcome to the inaugural episode of the MTR Monthly Mortgage Minute. It's going to be a space for us once a month to talk about the pressing issues in the mortgage world. You guys know me as D-Palm. You're used to having me yell about sports and comic books and all sorts of things. But today I'm going to talk to you about the world of mortgages. My background really quickly is I've been in the mortgage industry for 10 years. I have mostly worked on the operations side, but recently made this shift over to sales, the reason why I'll talk about later. But the reason I am so passionate about this industry is because the idea of homeownership is kind of ingrained in the American dream, if you will. Particularly if you look at kind of rates of people, you know, retaining wealth over generations. Here's a not so fun fact. By current standings, the median wealth for a black family in America will be $0 by 2035. So I decided that in 2019, it was important to use the platform I built over at MTR and the people who listen to me to tell them about how they can get into a home. Because I see too many people who say that homeownership is not for me, or I like renting, or I've never really thought of, I could never own a home. That's not true. I'm firm in my belief that the dream of homeownership can be a reality for everyone. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow. But if you don't start asking the questions as to how you get there, you'll never make that first step. So what we're going to do here is meet here once a month. We're going to have someone on either in the mortgage industry or close to the mortgage industry, or someone who's going through these things themselves. And we're going to walk you through kind of not the process, because I'm not going to sit here and tell you how to do it. I'm going to tell you that it can be done. It's important to me because, like I said, 10 years in the industry, right? So last May, I bought my first home, my wife and I did. And I was sitting at the closing table and I realized that I was terrified. As a processor, I closed 20 to 25 loans a month. That was easy for me. I know everything I was going to be signing. But at that table, on that day, pure fear. And if I felt that fear, I couldn't imagine what many people felt going through them on their end. So I wanted to make sure I was helping out and trying to be a resource for people who needed it. And today we've got on our editor-in-chief of MTR, Chris, and we're going to talk about his homeownership journey, because I don't think I'm letting any cats out of any bags here, but a congratulations in order as you're now building your next home you're living in, correct?
Yes. Yes, I am. Just signed the contract literally on Saturday. So I am a lot of money short right now. that's where your Universal FanCom money went to, guys. I'm sorry.
Let's start with your story, because it's interesting, because I think particularly even in my house, like in the place where I grew up, people didn't really talk about this kind of thing. No one really, and it doesn't happen anywhere. You ask people about mortgages, they get scared, they get tensed up, because as I've always explained to people, the Latin for mortgage is mors mihi. It's till death. It's an imposing word. And I think that it can be scary for a lot of people. So what, you recently sold your first house. Let's talk about that in a second. But when you bought your first home, what was the kind of the impetus for doing that?
Literally, I had no place. I never had my own place. I always lived with somebody. When I first got out of college, I lived with my dad for a little bit. It's funny, I'm back to doing that right now. I lived with my dad for a little bit. Then I moved in with my one of my frat brothers and lived with him. I never had my own place. Even in college, I was living with somebody else. Right. So I was like, I want my own place. And it just so happened that at one point I had started looking for a new place. Like years before, it was like at the height of the real estate market back in like 06, 07. And I was like, those prices were ridiculous. So someone told me, it was like, I have no way I'm paying that much money for a shack. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking, right in 2008. So the market had crashed and was coming back. So the real estate market had completely crashed. So prices were low. So I started looking, and there were a lot of foreclosures, and I ended up getting a foreclosure, under $200,000 in this area. And, things just picked up from there. I went from looking to, next thing you know, second, third time out, I found the house I wanted and put a contract in and went into it. So it moved kind of quickly for me, but that's kind of where it started, is me wanting to have something of my own. And I had my dad and other people tell me continually telling me the tax benefits of having of home ownership. And so that kind of pushed me to kind of looking and seeing, well, right, let me just go ahead and take this lead. But it definitely can be a nerve-wracking thing.
Of course it can. And what's interesting about the tax break you point out, I always tell people, it's like, this is literally proof the government wants you to own a home.
Yeah.
And so when you say, oh, I can't, like, find out a way, because the government wants to find a way to put you in a home, because, like you said, the tax breaks are there to be used. They're not there to disincentivize you from owning a home. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I think the thing to me, like, I always tell people, just in my life in general, I'm very privileged. And so I have people that look out for me and don't take advantage of me. Like, I miss the housing market when people were literally being taken advantage of.
Right.
You know, and I had people like my dad that can help me through the way and help me, you know, avoid certain things. And then I also had, I had a real estate agent that I'm using right now, the same one I'm using to help me buy my first house, to help me buy my second house, who also looked out for me and wasn't trying to take advantage of me, and made sure. It's like, when I sat down, the first thing, cause I over-research everything. And the first thing I had to realize is, you know, people will, especially when you talk to the real estate person first, because they, when you talk to the loan officer, they'll just tell you how much you can afford.
Right.
Which isn't really how much you can afford.
Well, it's how much. And I think that's kind of the approach, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go on this side of the table as far as sales, is because I'll tell people, it's like, here's what you can afford, but why, but what do you need? Like, well, it's one thing to say, oh, I can afford $250,000 worth of house. Do you need $250,000 worth of house? Is it going to be?
Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. That's what people, I think that was the thing that hurt so many people, is there wasn't any, they were being taken advantage by real estate agents and loan officers who didn't have their best interest at heart. And if you don't know that, like, I remember having an argument with somebody on Twitter at one point where someone was like, oh, you know, you can go out and get a $400,000 house with this kind of salary. I'm like, you're going to be stretching it thin. That's going to be hard. Like, oh no, right. It's easy to do. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not how that works.
100%. You know? It's amazing. Watching people stretch their capacity and then wonder why they're going to be dealing with foreclosures or restructures in 5 to 6 years. You're like, oh, because you stretched yourself to capacity. You said, oh, here's how much I can afford, not how much house I needed to afford. And I think that's what's interesting in today's market, as you see more and more lending go online. As you talk to real estate agents, they don't love the online lenders, because this is literally, for a lot of people, the largest financial transaction you'll ever make.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to do it with someone who doesn't know the intricacies of your story. So I always, first advice I tell anyone who's looking for a home is, yes, your real estate agent is very important. You have someone you're comfortable with. You just spend a lot of time in a car with that person. You also need to be really comfortable with your lender. Have a conversation with your lender about not just, oh, I want to buy a house, but also your financial goals. What are your goals in 20 years? What do you want this 30 years of mortgage to look like? Do you want to be in this house in 5 to 7 years? Or are there different goals? So I think that aspect and that kind of care is really something that's lost in the industry these days on both real estate and lending side. And I think it's to the detriment of the buyer even today.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the thing that helped me, because again, I over-researched everything, as we'll talk about it later when I get into building the new construction. You can go down rabbit holes. But when I walked into my real estate agent and talked to him, I already had an idea of certain things I wanted. Like, I knew up front, like, whatever, I'm getting a fixed rate. Like, I'm not doing an ARM. I'm not doing an interest-only loan. I'm not doing any of that shit, because I saw what happened to everybody else. And was
right.
Like,
the balloon payment hits. An ARM is an adjustable rate mortgage. Basically, it's saying for 1 to 5 years, you're paying based on a treasury index, and you don't have to pay the full payment. At 5 to 7 or whatever the ARM comes up, the balloon payment hits, and your prices go up, and that's what happens. And a lot of the subprime loans in the early 2000s, people getting foreclosed on, because the balloon hit. And while they were thinking, oh, I'll be out of the home in 7 years, if the market slows down and you can't sell the home in 7 years, then you've got a problem.
Yeah, and that hurt a lot of people. So I already knew I wanted that. But beyond that, I also knew going in that I was like, I know that they're going to tell me, because I did a lot of the pre-approvals online and stuff like that to come back. So you can get a house that's worth $400,000. I was like, I just did the quick math on what that monthly payment would be. And I know sometimes they tell you don't do this, but my personal thing was, and I did this even with a new one, is like, I knew what my monthly payment would be. I knew what I wanted to be at. I knew what I could be at. And then I knew what would just be out of my price range. Like what, like if I add up all of my expenses, my normal expenses for a month, being able to live, you know, live comfortably, go, still go out, have some money on the side, save some money. Mm-hmm. What could my mortgage payment be and be okay? And I came to the idea, I was like, they're going to tell me I can afford a $400,000 house. I want something that's under, I went to my, I was like, I want something under two. I want you to find me something that's under two. Cause I was like, I don't want to, I told him, I don't want a roommate. I don't want, I want to be able to live in something right now where I know I don't have to worry about picking up a roommate to pay that bill. So if that's at where I was at that time, 10 years ago, it's got to be something that's under $200,000. He was like, all right, cool. Let's go find something for that. And we did. And, you know, we'll talk about this later, but that ended up being a really great investment for me, which I think a lot of people don't understand is your house can be, a, can be, will probably be the best investment you can ever make. Because right. if you do it right, you can make out like a bandit.
So we got our house for just over 200, and part of the reason why I was so excited about the property and the house itself is that it's a just a couple of things. There were easy add-ons to add value. So our basement is unfinished, but the walls are up and it's already wired for water, air, and power.
Oh, that's perfect.
So my goal, like my, one of my big plans for 2019 is to finish the basement so that whenever we do decide to sell this house, it's already added resale value. So what were some of the unexpected challenges of being a new homeowner that you kind of, because like you said, you over-research everything and I'm the same way, but there's still shit that hits you that you're like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. So again, the whole idea of getting, so my first home was an old, obviously an older home, wasn't a new build. I do not, and I know some people have might have other thoughts. I do not recommend a new build for people, first time home buyers.
We'll because, talk about that later, but yeah.
Right. Because it's just, it was so much. Like, I bought a foreclosure, which meant the bank owned it, which meant that, you know, there were certain things that were found in the home inspection that the bank was like, take it or leave it. You know, there were certain things that they did have to fix. Well, other stuff was like, one of the biggest things that I had to get fixed were, there's two things. One, it was, I needed to run my service panel, my electrical service panel was out of code. I think it was only like 100 amps. Mm-hmm. So I had to get a whole nother service panel put in and a whole new like running. So bought the house already $2,000 out of my pocket when I first moved in. I also moved in and I moved in like April 2009 and the AC unit didn't work at the time. I'm like, it's fine. We got windows. It's fine. I didn't use AC that much going up either. I'm fine. I don't need AC. I needed AC because it was like one of the hottest fucking summers we had. So that was like another $1,500 out of the pocket. Like there, I don't think people understand, like, unless you're buying like a condo or a townhouse where, you know, there's still like an HOA fee and maybe they, there are some things they can fix or there's some things that are under your home warranty. You have to be prepared to fix everything yourself.
Precisely.
Or get somebody to pay. So that was a big thing for me. It's just like, I remember one time I was about to go to a friend's birthday party. There was a birthday that night. I was about to go head out the door. And I walked down the basement and my water heater had cracked and water was all over the basement floor. I literally texted her and said, my water heater just broke. I can't come out that night. So I had to call somebody to come out, get another water heater, $1,700. You know, it's just like, that was my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but you're right. It's about when you're going to buy like an older home or particularly a foreclosure, you've kind of got to take what you get there. Yeah. We were fortunate not to have to go through that. And we've had the same challenges. We've had things pop up. We're like, well, I didn't think that'd be a problem. We had to get a fence put in before we moved in because we have two dogs. Mm-hmm. Like that was one of the first things we had to do.
Yeah. Like the house was built in 1969.
Ours was, I think, 65. Yeah, same time.
So the basement was technically finished, but it looked like somebody died in one of the rooms down there. Well, because what? So again, foreclosure. It was a Rambler, but it had a basement. And what they had done was because again, this is right when the financial crash happened. So what a lot of people did, especially in the neighborhood I was in, what they had done was they had turned their homes into rental properties where they rented upstairs and downstairs. So it's very clear upstairs, they probably were the main floor where somebody lived. Where the downstairs didn't have heat, and they had put this wood-burning stove in, and they had made this monstrosity vent that was not by code to vent the heat out. They had apparently I found out that the kitchen was also not by code. I found this out when I went to sell it.
Yeah, so those are when you find out lots of things.
Right. So all this stuff happened. So I left the basement the way it was for like 2 years. And eventually one day I was like, I want to turn the basement into a man cave. So I didn't, you know, again, I decided that, and I recommend this for anybody who goes out there to buy their house. If you can, especially for your first home, if you can try to do the things by yourself, mm-hmm. or get your friend or get somebody you know to do it with you, that's the best thing to do. So me and my dad took down the wood paneling and the walls, and then we put the drywall up, and I finished my I did that myself. And when we took down the walls, we realized that they didn't have the basement wasn't framed by code. Like, you know, you're supposed to have your studs like 16 yeah. inches apart. They were not 16 inches. Right. They were very random. But this allowed me to see like how things are supposed to be, how they're not supposed to be, and kind of go through it that way. And it was a very, very good learning experience for me. But again, that costs a lot of money to do. It's just like, it just all piles up and it's
interesting. And I like the way that you're framing it as money out of pocket, but you also got to look at it as an investment because come this past year, when it came time to sell that home, I bet you were pretty happy about the money you poured in.
Oh no, absolutely. Cause I put all that money in. So there's two things, right? One, there's the money you're putting in, but you also got to see you get that money back in your taxes. Mm-hmm. I get like I've talked about this on the Insanity Check before. Like at some point I feel like you're almost robbing people because of what you get, like the things you can claim on your taxes when you're a homeowner, you get a lot of that money back.
Like my home office that I'm recording from.
Yeah. Oh yeah. God forbid you run a business out of your home and you have the ability to turn one of your rooms into a dedicated office for your business. You're making out like a bandit. I'll just put it that way. Like it is very, very lucrative for you to do. And it'll help you make some of the money you're putting into this stuff back. Cause sometimes you can actually claim that work.
You can claim your internet too.
Yeah, you can claim your internet. You can claim your utilities. You can claim all this stuff. So there are definitely ways to make your money back while you're in it. But when it comes time to sell, especially if you keep an eye on, and this is where the investment part comes in and where it happened to me. I decided to sell my home within like a 2 month period. Like beginning of January of 2018, I had no thoughts of selling my home. And something just had me look around at the properties around me. I was noticing other people were selling their homes around like February in my neighborhood. So I was like, I wonder what those homes are going for right now. And I realized that those homes were going in the 300,000 range. And there I knew go. What I paid for my house when I got it. And I was like,
you knew you had to pour $100,000 into it.
And there's another aspect of this I think is also very, very important. If we're talking about the mortgage, take it back a little bit. When I bought my home, I did a FHA loan, first time home buyer program. Mm-hmm. So I had to put down the minimum 3.5%. I know a lot of things that people talk about how you got to put down your 20%. You don't have to. I know I'm even with my new home right now. We'll talk about this later. I'm not putting down 20%. I refuse to because I want to have some money on the side for myself and I don't want to put down all that money there. So I had to pay the PMI and the private mortgage insurance on the FHA loan. But after about five, and I got a decent enough rate at that time, it was like 5.5 fixed rate.
Right.
Which at that time was pretty fucking good.
Right.
But again, I've had people that kind of looked out for me. So I actually had a loan officer call me like 5 years later and to tell me, it's like, hey, you know, and it was so weird because Wells Fargo has not been good to black people, but they were good to me. The guy called me because my mortgage had been run through one mortgage on me and they had got bought by Wells Fargo or they were Armor Wells Fargo. So a loan officer calls me. It's like, hey, just let you know rates have lowered. So maybe you want to look into refinancing your loans. At first, I'm skeptical because I'm like, I don't trust loan officers calling me or refinancing. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Especially cold calls. Like, what is
this? Cold calls to get out of here. But then I went back and started looking at what he was saying. I started looking. He had sent me the document. He sent me, like, some paperwork. I looked at it more and was like, okay, you know, he's talking about refinancing. And he suggested this. He should just not refinance, still a fixed rate, refinance at a lower rate at a 20-year mortgage. Mm-hmm. My original mortgage was 30-year. So by refinancing at the 20-year, my mortgage payment per month didn't really change, but I was paying down more of the principal.
Right.
So then when it came time to sell back last year, I had paid down so much of my principal that not only was I selling, you know, going to be selling my house worth more than it was when I bought it, I also owed less on my mortgage as well. So when I sold, I made out really, really well.
Let me just slow down really quickly so I can explain some things to people who are listening. So what Chris is talking about is essentially why you pay your mortgage. So when you're paying your mortgage, basically you buy your home at a certain number. And like Chris said, a lot of people, especially these days, don't put down that 20%. It's, you can, and I'm not going to tell anyone not to, I'm not going to tell you to manage your finances. But if you're in your head saying I need 20%, there are ways to get you in a home that are under 20%. You don't even have to go FHA anymore. They have conventional loans that are 3% down.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, that's one thing I want to do on this podcast, is disabuse people of the things that you think you know. There are more programs and more ways to get into homes than ever before. So if you say to yourself, I don't have 20%, and that's what's stopping you, revisit it, please. That's all
especially,
I'm saying.
Especially if you're a veteran. Oh, trust me, you really need.
Well, this isn't the VA. I will do a podcast on VA loans.
Yeah.
And some of the benefits there that you can get 100% of your finance. It's they've got really good VA programs, really good USDA programs that are available to people who it applies to. But staying here right now, and what Chris mentioned was an FHA. So that's a government-backed mortgage, and that has required mortgage insurance. What the mortgage insurance is basically saying, it's an extra fee put on top of your money that says, this is ensuring the government has backing in case you default on a loan. Mm-hmm. Conventional loans also have what's called PMI, which is private mortgage insurance. It's not through the government. It's through a private company. These can usually be a little higher or a little lower based on things like how much money you're being lent and the rate at which you're lending it. Now, when people say, oh, I don't want any MI, you're probably saying that just because you've been told that too. Like Chris just explained, with FHA loan, he was able to refinance out in 5 years because the money he put down every month was going towards building equity in the home. And the moment on a conventional that your loan hits 78% in equity, legally the bank has to drop off your private mortgage insurance.
Yep.
You can request a review at 80. So let's say, oh, I'm not going to be, I haven't been in the house that long, I don't know if I'm there. Do what Chris did. Take a look at the surrounding area, because that's one of the best indicators of the value of your home, is to watch what other homes, and don't go off list prices. This is one of the big bugaboos for people here. When you say, oh, I saw this thing was listed for, you cannot go off listed prices, because that's not how the databases work. That's not how appraisals work. They go off of what was actually sold.
So also don't look at that Zillow and Redfriend. Those don't matter either. Like you said, look at the sold prices.
Look at sold prices. Those are public records. You can't access them. Look at sold prices around you to get a, and then you can do it historically, so you can get a valuation on how the neighborhood is trending. That's kind of the research that I'm sure Chris did before he bought his first home, and looks like he's before he's building the second one. And that way you can say, oh, well, not only am I building equity by paying my mortgage out, I'm building equity just by being here. Mm-hmm. Because the value of the land that I'm on is increasing every year. And while we've had some up and down years in the last 4 or 5, I can tell you right now, the way things are trending, it looks like a pretty stable upward trend as far as housing market. So if you're saving for 20%, that house you're looking at, first of all, it may not be there in 3 months. But secondly, that 20%, that number is only going to grow as the time goes on.
And there's different, like, again, not to get ahead of what I'm doing on my second one, I talked to the loan officer for my, one of the loan officers for my second one, is I told them up front, because I didn't know I could, again, do your research, because it's something I didn't know I could do, and now they do. You might be able to, depending on what your loan type is and what your situation is, you might be able to pay that PMI up front, mm-hmm. and it could be less than what you would pay per month, which is what I'm going to do with my next one. I'm going to put down a fixed number. And so that my monthly PMI will not exist.
Just pay it up front.
I'm gonna pay it up front, and it's gonna actually be saving me money than if I paid it month to month. And you know, there are so many different options there. So like you said, like we're kind of jumping over a lot of things. I know that as you go through your podcast with this, you'll be going into more details and all of this stuff. But I think the biggest thing for people to understand is you do not need the 20%. If you think you can do, if you have everything else but that 20%, you might need to start just talking to somebody.
Right. And again, just have the conversation. We're going to keep going in a second, but I do want people to know my biggest piece of advice for anyone who's thinking about getting in the housing market. The first thing you do before you go talk to a realtor, go talk to a loan officer. If you don't know a loan officer, someone in your life has purchased a home, we live on a relationship-based business. They depend on that relationship to build the next business. So what I'm saying is go find one, because like Chris said, some people will tell you how much money you can afford. And that's always a good thing to know. But if you get into the process early, you get the money part out of the way, it's a lot easier to go looking for a house once you've got your money squared away. In today's environment, because of the speed with which houses are leaving the market, I advise everyone to get a pre-approval and not a pre-qualification. And what's the difference? A pre-qualification is based on, is a letter that's based on limited information. It says that this person is lended, is ability to be lent X number of dollars. If I'm a seller and I see a pre-qual letter, that's nice. What a lot of lenders are doing, and particularly myself, is we're offering pre-approvals now, where we'll underwrite the entire file without a property. That way you're not saying, I'm able to get this much money and we'll close in maybe 30 or 45 days. You're telling the seller that I'm already vetted. The money's in the pocket. I'm looking for a house. I'll get closed in 15 days because all we need is an appraisal and a title order. That's how I bought my home. We lost our first two homes, I believe, to better offers or offers that could close faster. The third offer, I said, look, we'll just get the pre-approval out of the way. We got the paperwork moved. We got everything going so that when we found the home we wanted to be in, it was a very quick turnaround for us. The seller, actually, we moved too fast for the seller. They had to push back our closing because they're, but it was good. But it made me more confident as a buyer to say, oh, I'm not pre-qualified. I'm approved. Like, this is money that's been given to me. Let's find some. It's, you know what it is? It's going to the, it's going car shopping with an offer in your hand, with money in your pocket.
And I do that too. When I bought my new Camaro, that's what I did. I walked in and I told the dude exactly what I wanted. He was like, well, let's go. And I was like, look, I already got the money. Like, you can try to beat it if you want to. Because first of all, when you do that, when I walk into the talk to the finance guy for the car, mm-hmm. I tell them, it's like, here's what you have to beat. And they always tell me, it's like, I don't know if I can beat that. You're gonna try though, so go ahead and try. Same thing with the mortgage. So couple things. One, with the pre-approval, we'll get into the new build stuff. Sometimes the new constructions, they make you pre-approve with their lenders to begin with. Mm-hmm. What my realtor did, because again, Jeremiah is my lender. He works for Long and Fort Foster, and he was like, listen, you're gonna sell. We're working on you selling your house, but I know you're also gonna look. Then what you do? Go ahead, talk to the loan officer guy I have in my office. Let's go ahead and get a pre-approval now. You talk to him, he'll get you pre-approved. And then once I get the pre-approval, that the sheet they give you with the pre-approval shows you everything. So it breaks down sometimes they have to plug in like estimates on like
the taxes. Right, on the home value actually, yeah.
Right, the home value and things like that. But it's things like, you know, people don't understand that people go, when you look at, you go online and you're like, oh, I can afford this amount of money per month. Oh, that's what my mortgage is going to be. No, because your mortgage also includes your property taxes, which normally, you know, if you go into Redfin or Zillow and they're showing you what your mortgage would be, you gotta click that customized calculations button to make sure it also calculates what your potential property taxes would be. So see what your actual cost per month will be.
And that's super important because people gotta realize that the property tax can vary no matter where you're living. And exactly. Again, these are public records. You can Google your property tax. You can Google what they paid at that residence the last year of property tax.
Exactly. And so if your loan officer is worth their weight in gold, they'll ask you where you're looking. So they'll look that up and they'll plug those numbers into your sheet. So right. I got a full. So what I did when I got my pre-approval, I got a full sheet that told me, all right, here's the amount of money. Here's what you're looking to pay. Here's what the rate right now could be. This is what your property tax would be. This is what your closing cost would be.
Okay, so the sheet he's talking about is called the LE or a loan estimate. Mm-hmm. And when I tell people this and they say, oh, I go shopping for lenders, I want to find the best rate. First of all, the best rate is not always the best idea. Mm-hmm. I'll explain that in a later podcast. But what you need to look at first and foremost, whenever you get handed an LE, closing costs and prepaids.
Yeah.
Those are the numbers that matter because everything else can change.
Yep.
Legally. And it's going to because you're going to have certain things that go up and down. That's fine. Your prepaids are probably going to move too because based on when you close, it's all very – because let's say this way. Let's say your taxes are due in October and you bought a house in March. You're not going to pay the taxes from October to March, obviously, but from March on, that's part of the prepaids.
Yep.
You have to pay that up front. You have to pay 1 year of homeowner's insurance. So whatever your homeowner insurance bill is, it's going to be rolled into your monthly PMI. But up front, they got to collect the year. So what they do is they collect that year up front, and they collect the next 12 months in arrears, so that when it comes time to renew, you don't have to cut another check. It's already been paid for you.
Right.
It's the little things that are baked into the loan that people, you know, have questions about. So this is kind of, I want to address those right now, because you're right. It's that pre-approval is so powerful, particularly in today's market. I beat out cash offers on a pre-approval because they're saying, oh, this is not only is it verified funds from a verified lender, we can close in 15 to 20 days because they've already done their due diligence on this buyer. If I am a seller, and I guess what? People always think about from the buyer side. And I know we're going to talk about your side in a second, seller side in a second. If I'm a seller in the market in 2019, I'm not selling leisurely. I have somewhere to go.
Yeah.
Which means that the offer that comes in that says I can close the fastest and the most guaranteed funds, and that is the least risk for me as a seller, because let's say that sale falls through, I've got to start the whole process over again.
Yep.
So the faster I can do that as a seller, the more attractive an offer it's going to be.
And also just as a buyer with that, it helps me. I was able to talk to the loan officer and basically be like, because he asked me, it was like, okay, the first was the pre-qualified was, okay, you're pre-qualified for X amount of money, right? But then I could go back to him and be like, all right, I want to spend $2,500 a month, or I want to spend, I can tell them what I want my payment to be, and then come back to me and tell me, okay, well, going where you're looking at and stuff like this, this is probably the amount of money you're looking to the house you're looking to buy. I can tell them how much money I'm trying to put down. I was going back and forth with the loan officer. I was like, what if I put 20% down? What if I put 18% down? What if I put 10% down? What am I PMI going to be? What is this right. like? Like you said, it's so powerful because you can kind of go back and really get a really good idea of how, like, I was able to take that information, then plug it into my spreadsheet, my monthly budget spreadsheet, and basically be like, oh, I can afford a little bit more than this. Oh, I can do this. I can do this. If I end up having to pay this amount, is it going to break my bank? No, it's not. It's going to be, it might be tight for a little bit, but I'll be able to pay that and be able to be comfortable and save money and put money away here and do this and do that. I can do that. Like, it really is a really powerful tool. And like you said, you get that, and then you can kind of go and talk to your realtor. Like I said, my realtor wasn't going to let me go out and look at anything until I had gotten that information first.
Well, it's so interesting because people say, oh, I have a realtor, and I'll do the lending later. I'm like, hey, so wouldn't you rather know for sure what you can afford as opposed to just – because that's the worst feeling I could ever think for someone to have is get their eyes in that dream house. Say, oh, this is the house I've always wanted. And then find out that while you may be qualified for that amount, it doesn't exactly fit into your lifestyle or fit into your plan. So I always tell people, get the messy stuff out of the way. Get your finances squared away so you can go have fun and look at houses. And look at houses that are realistic and within range. So when you – and this is the last time I'm going to harp on pre-approvals. I know it's – I've said it probably 1,000 times in this podcast, and I'll say it 1,000 times more. It's the most powerful tool for a buyer in the 2019 market. And it's something that you should be requesting up front. And it's something that you – honestly, I think you should call a lender before you call a real estate agent. That's not me and my lender bias. That's just, hey, I think I'd be more comfortable knowing what I could afford before I went shopping.
No, Chris, absolutely.
When you sold your home last year, what was that experience like? Because unlike you, I've never sold a home. So you're going to have to educate me for a second.
Oh, man, I think it was nerve-wracking. And I think it was nerve-wracking for me because I felt like, again, I knew what the houses in my neighborhood were going for. And part of me was like, I'm hoping the housing market doesn't crash, right? Because I felt like I was robbing people. Because I was just like, I could see how much money I could potentially make if the house got sold at the list price I had. And so I'm just so nervous because it's like you're in a waiting game. Like when you're buying, you're going out, you're looking, and especially again, caveats here. The last two times I've been going out to buy, it's really been on some. I'm not in a rush. The first time I literally almost stumbled into buying a home. Like it really was like, am I really looking for it? I guess I'm kind of looking. Next thing I know, I'm like sitting in the offer. I'm writing an offer on the house going like, oh shit, we're really doing this. Now I'm like, oh no, I can take my time. I got a place to stay. I don't have to rush out. But selling, it was like, I got to pack all my stuff up. I've moved out and now the house is sitting there and like your house can sit there for a couple weeks.
Right.
A couple months.
It's nerve-wracking.
A year. Like you don't know. Like you don't know who like you know who's seen you're waiting to get feedback from your from buyers and from real estate agents who've seen the house. Like, you don't know what's gonna happen. When somebody puts an offer in, you don't know if they're gonna flake, if they're gonna fall out, because that's the thing my real estate agent keep telling me. And tell everybody signs, at any point the deal can fall through.
Right.
And so, and again, remember the entire time you're trying to sell your house, I moved out of my house so that people could, I felt it was easier to sell the house if it was empty. I'm still paying that mortgage. So even though I'm not in the house, I'm not living in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still paying that mortgage.
Right. So it's like, the mortgage doesn't go away until it's sold.
Right. And so it's like, yeah, I can't really move on until that's sold. So to me, the selling the home was a nerve-wracking thing because then everything you do on the buyer side, you got to do on the seller side. So now it's like they got the home inspection. You got the appraisal. Like, the home inspection went fine for us. The appraisal came through and the appraiser came through and told me there were certain things that the lender's appraiser came through and there were certain things I had to do for their lender. Like, I had to put a railing in. I had to do all this other stuff.
So it sounds like your buyer was an FHA, because FHA, yeah, just again, I'm gonna sprinkle in some stuff here. FHA has more requirements on their appraisals than conventional loans.
Yeah.
And because they're government backed, you have to have certain, like you said, safety rails, certain things have to be certain sizes. What else did you have to change to be up to FHA standards?
I had to add a railing to the downstairs basement, right, outside. I had to do that. The stove in the kitchen, they basically came in and said the kitchen wasn't up to
FHA compliant.
There was a little kitchenette in the basement, because basically what the home buyers before, the original home buyers, what they had done was they turned the downstairs basement into another rental unit. And so the way they sell that was, we have a little kitchenette down there, right? You can put a little refrigerator in there. You have a stove. And they basically, the lender appraiser came through and was just like, yeah, this is not out of the code. So they were like, you got to remove the stove. And so, but the buyer wanted the stove, because they were like, fuck that. Once we get in there, we're going to keep that in the kitchen. So I basically moved the stove into another room.
Yeah.
And the appraiser was just like, all right, fine. It's not in the kitchen anymore. I had the front stairs had they had metal railings and the metal was like peeling, so I had to scrape them, fresh paint them. They were
cracking. FHA fresh paint always gets me.
Yeah, they're more annoyances than anything else. Mm-hmm. But safety.
It's needed because it is the standardized for government lending. I understand the why, but it can still be a headache. Yeah.
And even before then, when I went to go sell the house, the first thing I did was, I had my realtor come through, look at the house, and give me suggestions on things I could put into the house to add value. So I basically got a home equity loan line of credit for $25,000 and was like, that's my budget. I'm gonna put $25,000 back into this house, and we're gonna make some changes. So I renovated the downstairs bathroom, renovated the upstairs kitchen kind of by putting in a new floor and a granite countertop. Anything you put in your kitchen, you're going to get your money back on. Same thing with the bathroom.
Right.
Made the downstairs bathroom functional, and then repainted the entire house, which ended up helping to fix some of the walls and things like that. So I put that money, got a new roof, did some landscaping and things like that. Because like I said, I didn't want to put too much into the house, but I wanted to put just enough to kind of, spruce it up a little bit better and refinish all my floors. And so did all of that. And like I said, then we finally got a buyer to put a contract in. We did lower the price once. We started at, I think, 305, and it lowered it down to 290. And we actually got somebody to put a contract in on 290. I think the house was on the market for, I want to say, a month and a half. Hmm. I put it on the market around the middle of September. I think we got a contract, I think, end of October, so maybe about 2 months.
That's a really quick turnaround.
Yeah, everything in my neighborhood was selling. We were lucky that for some reason my neighborhood was in a really hot spot. And honestly, when I put my house on the market, is right when it kind of got cool. But before then, houses were getting contracts on them in under a month. Like, a house would go up in my neighborhood, and within a month, it was having a contract on it. I was one of the longer ones, which was making me nervous. I was like, oh, my God, I put my house on the market right now.
Well, also, you got to remember that when all those all those sales got put in records, it's going to affect the value of your home.
Exactly.
Your value increased because of all those sales.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so when I dropped my price, it made it even more attractive. We were like, oh, okay. Because like I said, they were like, yeah, it was just so nerve wracking to figure out what was going on. Like, and I was so excited when I finally signed that paperwork, I was just like, I was waiting for the money to hit my account so I could be like, it is officially done.
And then turn off that auto pay for that mortgage.
Oh, absolutely. Turn off that. I made sure that I was done with everything was like,
utilities out of your name.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you've done this, you've reaped your benefits from your smart investment, and now you're moving on to your new home where you've signed, like we said on Saturday, you signed the contract to build a home on a lot.
Yes.
How does it feel?
One, it feels great because this is the neighborhood I'm moving into. So I'm now going the complete opposite way. I was in a neighborhood before, but there was no HOA. It was an older neighborhood. I'm now moving into a planned community with a single builder. It's actually they're in the, I think their second phase right now. They're they started building back in 2006. There, the community started in 2006.
Okay.
I was talking to the sales guy about it. He kind of explained to me, he's like, the builder is Toll Brothers, and he was like, they built this neighborhood in 2006, right when the financial crisis happened, so the housing market was bad. And they normally, when you get these communities, these planned communities, you change build. You get one builder builds one phase, and you get another builder come in.
Right.
Toll Brothers is building this entire community, and they've been there since the beginning. And one of the first things they did, even though the housing market crashed, they built the clubhouse. Now, if you go to any of these other neighborhoods, the newer neighborhoods, you'll see a sign that say clubhouse coming soon. Right. Like the clubhouse will be coming soon for like 5 years. Okay. They built the clubhouse up front to basically say, we're going to be here for the long run, even though we know the market's down, we're going to make sure that value is added in this community, which is kind of giving me, you know, for the price of this house, it's giving me confidence that this is a community that's gonna hold its value because the builder has put into this community to make sure that they hold their value. They don't drop their prices. They don't. They make sure that everything kind of has been holding at its value there. When I first started looking, this was the community that I looked at first. So I looked at some other houses. I looked at getting a newer, an already owned home and renovating that. I looked at other newer communities, but this is the one I always wanted. So it feels good to get the kind of like the dream home I'm building now. It's going to be a while too, because they don't, to get the permits in our county, it takes like 5 months. They're really, really slow. And then they take their time in building. Like some other builders, they do a quick turn. They're like 90 days from when you sign to when they break ground to when you're able to move to close. So about 90 days. Toll Brothers in this community is like, it's 5 to 6 months. Even when they build. So they take their time on it. So I'm really looking forward to the process, but it's so different. It's so different than the first time I bought.
So what's been the main difference? Because I know that new constructions, it's nice because you get to kind of tailor the home to exactly what you want. But at the same time, there's a lot of options.
Well, so I haven't even gotten to the option part yet. But you're right. Like I keep going through. Oh, I put this in, do this, and then I look at the cost and be like, take that out. But even before then, it's like you got to put more money up front. When you do, we didn't really talk about this, but when I put down my first house, you got to put down your earnest money. When you put in your contract, you put your earnest money deposit down, which I think is probably just to kind of say you're serious. I think
it's usually an earnest money deposit, people know it's a deposit that has to go into basically, like you said, tell the seller, that you're serious. It's generally a standard about $3,000, and that's a check that's got to get cut before closing. It comes out of your closing costs. It's not just a lost $3,000, but it is saying in case you do walk away that the seller is remunerated in some way.
Right. So again, coming out of your pocket, maybe. It can be. I think up to $3,000. I think even for my first one, because of it was like $1,000. Like it's usually not that much, right? In comparison to what you're doing.
Right.
For this new build, I'm putting down First, it was $1,000 for me just to hold the plot.
Right, for the lot, yeah.
So I can then move over the money. So it was, it's 5% of the cost of that, the total cost of the house, the base price of the house. Then it was 20% for any structural options I'm adding in, the 20% of those structural options. Then it was 5% of the lot price, because there was a lot premium for my particular lot, because I'm in a cul-de-sac, and I get in one of the cul-de-sacs in one of the bigger lots in the entire neighborhood. So let me just say, it was a lot of fucking money. Okay,
but it's also very different, because like it was just strict paperwork. It's a lot more. The contract for a new build is not the same as the contract for resale.
No, absolutely not. And
it's a completely different animal.
And again, putting a lot of this money up front. And again, it's not like I'm just putting this money down. I'm never going to see it again unless I break the contract. it'll go towards my final closing costs and what the final money I got to end. But you have to put that money up front, because you got to understand that the builder is, they're going to build this house to my specifications. And if somehow I back out, you know, they need to have, they want to make sure I'm serious. They don't want just any old body coming in. Yeah, give me all the top line options, and all of a sudden go, you know what, never mind, I changed my mind. Have a process. I'm out. So you got to put down your money to say you're serious. And so, like I said, I sold my house and I made a lot. I got some good money off of that. So it's like, it's not. And again, I'm living with my dad, so I'm able to save a lot of money here. But it's still, that's probably the biggest check I've ever written,
right?
You know, and I'm just like, and so I haven't even gotten into, that was just a structural option. So me just sitting there trying to decide, I came in, first of all, other thing too, I think it's very important, because I talked to my realtor about this, and I think I even talked to the sales guy about it. Never think that you're going to go into a new build without a realtor. You need to have representation. Like we were laughing about, I was in there with my real, I have been eyeing this community for months. I would drive around the community. I did not step foot into that model home until my realtor was, me and him, we sold this house and we were ready to go and look. And I let him, you know, when we were, add that to the list of homes to go. It wasn't until he was with me that I stepped foot in the house and we signed any kind of paperwork. Because you need that representation. I needed him to look over the contract, make sure things, and ask certain questions. He was asking questions that I hadn't even thought of to make sure things were right, you know. And there's so many aspects in there. But I've read so many, like when you read, he told me things like research the builder. I had come down to two communities, but the community I'm into, and there's another one I was going to go for because I felt like I could get, it was still luxury homes, but it was cheaper. And I was like, And I can be into a home by March.
Sooner, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, and it's still a new build. I can do all this stuff. And I was looking around and I was like, but the finishes look cheaper. And I might be paying more for the other house, but I feel like I'm getting more for that. So he told me to go make sure, he didn't know the builder. He was like, go research the builder. And so I went out and started researching the builder and looking up and found all kinds of like terrible reviews for them. I was like, turn them off the list. And then I went back and looked at the builder for the home I'm getting into. I was reading some of the comments and I started realizing that some of the negative comments on some of these builders were because people went into the home and didn't have representation. And I'm seeing some people say, oh, you don't need to do that. You can just deal with a salesperson yourself. You don't need a realtor. And well, you're technically right. You don't need a realtor. You want a realtor. You need somebody who represents your interests.
Right.
You have to have that. Because again, they gave me a contract with all, like, again, the sales guy I'm dealing right now is, and I don't know if this is everybody's experience with new builds, and I don't think it is. He gave us a sample contract up front to me and the realtor to look over. He was like, this is a sample contract. Took out the names of the people. The sample contract for another house we sold like a few years ago. You can look it over. And then when we set the appointment up to come in and sign the new contract, he made sure to send me our specific contract like 2 days before, so that me and the realtor could look over before. Like, so he gave us all this up front to be basically like, we're helping you guys out. Make sure you. And I'm pretty sure that most aren't doing that. So we were ready to look over the contract first. And then there was also just the first set of options, which are structural changes you need to make because they're building you this, even though they're building you this home, they have to follow certain zoning laws, certain things right. in the permit, building codes. So it was like certain lot, because I looked at the, I want that lot. It was like, oh, well, you can't get that lot and have a walkout basement, or this lot has to be set this way. Or you can't get a deck with it. Like, there's all these different like aspects come in there. So our first meeting was me sitting down and them going, giving me a 6 sheets of paper that had all these structural options and what their prices were. And we're like, all right, here's the base price of the house. What options do you want? And they're giving me, they're actually doing a really good deal. They're giving me like $20,000 in incentives.
and that's something else people don't know about new home builds. Like, they want you in those homes. Like, if they build a home or if they own a lot and there's no one in there, they're losing money.
Exactly. So
they're going to incentivize you to purchase. You're right.
Yeah. So we just went through and I was picking the lot. And so our first meeting where I didn't sign any paperwork, it was me basically selecting, I want that lot. Let me go home and think about it. Maybe I gave like $1,000 like little deposit of saying, you know, hold that lot for me. But before I made so many changes in like some of the smaller structural things between that meeting and when I signed the contract, cause I was like, all right, do I really need a coffered ceiling? Do I really need this? Do I really need this? I took some things out. I added some things here and there. I was going to get another bedroom and I was like, that's an extra $6,000. Let me take that out. Let me put this here. Like, I was going back and it took me like, I think I worked myself into like a mania just trying to pick those options. And that's not even getting to your options like, you know, floor coloring and finishes and that kind of stuff. Like, that's next. That's my next thing is picking that stuff up. But just picking out structurally, what do you want your house to look like? It was a lot. And in trying to make sure that you stay within a budget of that, because it's very, very easy to blow through a budget on a new build because everything's like, oh yeah, of course I want a side loading garage. And yeah, you add, finish the basement, because that big the finished basement in the model home was amazing. And yeah, give me a wet bar, and then you find out that you've added on $100,000 worth of options, and now you've priced yourself out of what you said on your pre-approvals and what you want, and now you can't buy the home. Like, that's how people get into trouble. You got to go in with budgets. I set myself a budget. I was like, I'm not going to pay more than $20,000 for the lot. I'm not going to pay more than $20,000 in options for this set of options right here. And I'm now coming with the option that everything I go for now with options that aren't structural, things that are, I think this is a good thing.
Cosmetic or optional.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So to me, because you get so many, going back to the idea of us doing the mortgage thing, when you're doing the mortgage with a new build, you can roll some of these options into your mortgage, right? So it's like your base price is, you know, $400,000 is $400,000. All right, let's say the lot was another $10,000. So now your price is at $410. You're gonna, let's forget incentives. Let's just say you're gonna add in $20,000 in an option. So now you're at $430. Mm-hmm. Those are structural changes. Now you still haven't picked your floor coloring and your if you want wood floors and things like that. My thing is, for me, I'll stay at 430 because 430 will be what I want my loan officer to run my price to work off of. Because the other stuff, if I say like I got another $10,000 in options, I'm gonna add in like hardwood floors and new cat upgraded cabinet, things like that. If I add that stuff into the mortgage, if I ever change any of those things over the next 30 years,
you're still paying for
them. I'm still paying for it. Less than 30. I'm still paying for them. So I told my realtor and I told people going forward, the things I make at the design studio and things like that, I'm paying in cash. I'll pay at closing. Don't roll that into my mortgage, because at some point I might get sick of the floors and change all my floors out. I'm still going to be paying that into my mortgage.
So it's like, that you,
and it didn't hit me until I was going through all this stuff and thinking about that and looking at like the again, that pre-approval sheet with the closing cost of the, with all the engine. I started looking at it. I was like, wait a minute. If I put all that stuff in here, I'm paying. And again, look online, research online. And people will tell you, it's like, if you can, if you have the money to do it, which also goes why do I'm not putting down a full 20% because I want to make sure I have some money over so I can pay for some of these things like wiring. The wiring I want to get in my house where I want to put like, you know, a network cable in every room. It's like, I don't want to be paying for that over 30 years. No, I'll pay for that out of pocket. Like, I'll find a way to pay for that at closing versus, you know, and all that set itself a budget. I don't want to pay that into my mortgage. So it's little things like that you got to be careful of with a new build because it's like, again, it's like a candy store. Next thing you know, you've overloaded on candy. You're in a sugar rush and you're like, oh, fuck, I fucked myself over. So
but it sounds like you've got a good team with your real estate agent and your loan officer looking out for you and making you make good decisions. And also you've done your research and you're someone who's lived in a home. You're someone who's done the upgrades on your own. You know what these things are going to cost and how they're going to feel to do on your own as opposed to saying, oh, I'm paying for my wiring for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I look, I'm going to ask them how much it's going to be to put wood floors out the whole downstairs, the main level. But I'm also going to about to email the guy I had do my floors in my other home and give him the dimension of the room and be like, how much would it be for me to put wood floors in these rooms? How much would you charge me to do this? I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to go with you. And that way, if I need to go somebody else, because I did that previous home where I had to do fixing, I had to make service calls and I had to talk to contractors. I now have a list of people I've called before and I know what I've gone through and what I've
I was like, I think it was
but yeah, Chris. Yeah, I pull my cord out. But yeah, now that I've gone through that, and like I said, I don't think I could have. I would have been completely overwhelmed if I did a new build at my first home because it's things like you'll then go. These builders a lot of times make their money off of their upgrades because they're gonna upcharge you on some of this stuff. Some of the stuff is right. Like they're reasonable, but other stuff you're just like. No, it's like wood floors I know is going to be too expensive, you know, and I know I could probably do it on my own for cheaper. It's a matter of, you know, do I have the do convenience sometimes, but if I've never dealt with somebody for, if I never had a floor guy, I never knew who to reach out to for floors. I might be like, oh fuck it, just have them do the floors. Cause I don't know I'm the first person to talk to. And I don't know if that's even a good deal. It's like, it's so overwhelming. And right. I think that's the whole thing with buying a home. It's overwhelming. The first time I bought my home and we closed, my realtor said to me, it was like, congratulations, you now have $180,000 worth of debt. And it hit me. I was like, oh, shit, that is $180,000 worth of debt. Now, I mean, again, there's a way to offset it, but it's like that can weigh you. That can be scary. And so I definitely think that between what you're doing with this podcast and just like Google is a great tool. Google has helped me.
There's a lot of misinformation out there, but I think the reason I'm doing this podcast, the reason I had you on first is because I wanted the voice of someone who these people and who everyone listening knows and says it's home ownership isn't out of reach and there's lots of different ways to achieve it and there's lots of different ways to achieve that goal. But to say that I could never own a home, is defeat his attitude. You've got to ask the question, how do I get to the yes? How do I find my way? If you're not there right now, maybe we aren't all. How do you get to the place where you're ready to buy that home? Because otherwise, you're making a landlord rich, and there's nothing more aggravating to me than making my landlord rich. I remember the day I decided, I finally was, not decided, we'd already, we put the offer in. And the day I became at peace with buying the new home was I was mowing the lawn in the rental home, and I was like, I'm mowing someone else's yard.
Yeah. I mean,
and I was like, this is the last time. I think I put it on Instagram. I was like, this is the last time I'm gonna mow someone else's yard.
Yeah, and again, it's like it. This is one of those things that, you know, home ownership definitely isn't. There are a lot of people out there who might. It also comes down to your area. Like I'm lucky enough, and I think even you, in being in Atlanta, like I'm sort of envious of some of your prices down there. Yeah. You have to be careful of you got to look at it as an investment, mm-hmm. also, and make sure that the area, because again, I have a really good realtor who looks at things like areas and locations and be like, this is why this area is hot. you know, I've been keeping, I've been, you know, this is, you got to look out for this area. At one point I was looking at Fort Washington area. He kind of, like, Jeremiah likes to let me think things through sometimes before he kind of gives his opinion on it. So it's like, I told him at one point, I'm looking at Fort Washington area, Upper Marlboro, things like that. And I came back to him like a week or two later, it was like, yeah, take Fort Washington out of the equation. I'm like, I've been driving down 210 and I'm like, I can't stand that area. He was like, all right, cool. I didn't want to say, I was going to let you figure that out. He was like, yeah, I've been kind of telling people to stay away from the Fort Washington area. Like he'll talk to me about trends in the area and things like that. And you can kind of find out what areas are growing and where, and which ones are kind of sagging, which ones got hit by the last financial crisis. That's another place to look at too. What got hit by the last financial crisis? A lot of places have kind of slowly recovered from that. But the way I look at it is, if they got hit the last financial crisis, the next time that financial crisis hits, they could get hit again, you know? Right. And so just keeping an eye on those kind of things, it's, you know, people talk about, you know, it's weird to me. Sometimes people seem like they're more interested and more willing to play with their money in the stock market than looking to real estate. And I'm like, I feel like it's a little bit easier in real estate to kind of judge where things are going versus the stock market. To me, seems like it's like so out there. Like I don't think you can predict that. Here, right. It's a little bit easier to predict. And again, if you have the ability to, even if you don't have the ability to right now, this instance, if you can try to talk to somebody to try to figure out, like, even if you can talk to even if it's not a loan officer, talk to a financial person, somebody with finances, to see if it's possible in 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, right, how you can get to that point, because it literally is, it is really one of the greatest ways of building wealth and moving forward. That's what everybody does. It's like you get a property, and if you can sell that property at a profit when you're above water, oh man, like it's, man. You can then use that to get into the next property you want to get.
Exactly.
And then God forbid you get into the thing of buying multiple properties and then working that aspect. Like it is, you know, I think everybody got scared from the, you know, when the housing market crashed,
right?
But it's just like everything else. Like markets crash and they also go back up. Like I said, my first neighborhood crashed. I bought low and I sold high. It's just like the stock market, you know? So, yeah.
Well, man, Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time and walking us through your home ownership journey, man. Do you have any final pieces of advice for someone who's listening to this and says, well, maybe I can find a house?
I think the biggest thing is just start doing research. Like I said, there's a lot of misinformation out there, but you can pretty much tell what the misinformation is, because when you search for things, people say the same things, you know? And so it's easy to kind of weed through some of the stuff. And also talk to other home buyers, talk to people who have bought homes, and talk to multiple home buyers. Like I'll give you a perfect example of this. When I bought my home, one of my friends, she works for this research market company, right? And so every now and then she would ask me to come in and join one of the studies. She knew there's something they were looking for, people who fit something that I did. She would have me come in, make a quick $50 and be fine. So one time she needed to fill a group of home buyers. She got a group of three different groups. She got new home buyers, people that currently own homes, and then people that were looking to buy homes. And I got brought in as a new home buyer, and I got bought in like right after I bought my home, which is like, I bought my home in 2009. So I think maybe the end of 2009, that's when this will happen. So I'm sitting in the room and I'm the only one that had, I'm believe like one of the only ones that I'm talking to this other group of people. I bought my home at the, you know, as a foreclosure after the market had crashed and it got into the bottom. I bought low. Across from me is another person who paid $30,000 more for their quote unquote home. It was a condo. Right. And not like I'm talking like in this area, a condo, I mean literally an apartment. They bought an apartment. Like the rest of the apartment building is filled with people that are renters. they just happened to buy their little two bedroom unit for like $230,000.
Well, the thing is, and that's something that you see more and more now, is that people have different goals when they buy. Like for you and me, it was important to have our own space and have a lot. Where people like that, they're looking to say, oh, I can flip this condo in 2 years.
And that's what it was. They had bought their condo thinking that, because at that point, a lot of time people during that market, and it was even realtors at that time, were telling people, you got to go buy. And they rushed out to buy something way too high and not looking at the comps, not looking at anything else. And then the market crash, and now they're sitting on this condo that they cannot sell. They were underwater now in the market because they bought the condo for $230,000. It was now worth under what I paid for my single family home. So now they owe more on the house than the house is worth. And they're like, they're screwed. Now I'm looking around this table going like, and everybody had all these kind of stories, and they got to me and I'm just like, yeah, I bought my house for, you know, $180,000. I bought it and it got appraised for $190,000. I actually came out on top.
Our house appraised for more than we paid for it too.
Yeah. And so I'm like, and I felt so bad because everyone in that room had basically gotten taken advantage of because of that. And so it's like, you got to talk to people to find out what they're doing. You know, you got to understand the finance aspects of it. Don't rush into it. It's going to seem intimidating, but that's also when you go and ask questions. So you got to ask questions and ask people what they've been through and how they do it. And again, I don't think that if you go in properly armed with the right knowledge, I don't think you'll leave feeling it might still be a little overwhelming, but I don't think you'll be disappointed if you end up going through with and buying your house.
100%. Well, thanks for coming on, Chris. Again, this is the MTR Monthly Mortgage Minute. We'll be back next month, the second week of every month, second Wednesday, and kind of walking through a different aspect of the mortgage process. Again, like Chris said, there's a lot of information out there. Make sure you're finding the right information. Make sure you vet all the information. If it seems too good to be true, it might just be. So please talk to someone you trust before making any major financial decisions. That was your show. This is your outro. See you guys next month.